Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome to this week's podcast where we are going to talk about toxic relationships. And I know everybody wants to know about this, including myself. And how do you know what one is? How do you know if you're in one? So I brought my friend, Dr. Heidi Brock, on the podcast today. And for those of you who don't know, just a quick intro, Dr. Brock is a toxic relationship awareness and a healing specialist. And she has walked your walk, ladies and gentlemen. She spent 14 years in an extremely emotionally and narcissistically abusive relationship. And she finally got herself out, broke the chains, and turn her past into her passion. So now she helps people that are trapped in the darkness of these unhealthy relationships to get the hell out. Dr. Heidi, welcome to the podcast. Let's jump right in. How are you today?
I'm good. And I'm excited to finally be able to get on this show.
Yay. Well, let's, you know, add some color. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your past. What led you to this? It sounds like you were in a doozy of a relationship.
I was, but I would have never known it when I was in it. Of course, when people say, tell us a little bit about your past, I'm like, oh, how long is the recording set for? Because here we go. But, you know, those of the listeners who can relate when you say toxic relationship, I probably don't have to tell that much of my story, but I usually start by saying I was raised on a dairy farm in a little tiny community near Bozeman, Montana. Okay, up till about 4 years ago, nobody really knew where Bozeman, Montana was, but now thanks to Yellowstone, everybody knows where Bozeman, Montana is. So I always have to say that. But I grew up in a little Christian community. So we were in church twice a Sunday. There was a Christian school there. I went to the Christian school kindergarten through 12th grade. Then I went on to actually an undergrad college near you in Palos Heights. It was a Christian college, and I couldn't decide what I was doing, so I went back to Montana State. I grew up in an environment that was very, I don't want to say secluded, but it was really secluded from the rest of the world now that I'm not there. Mm. Because of the community, we saw the same people for the first 18 years of our life. You know, so you really felt like everybody knew you. Everybody had your best interest in mind. People were taking care of other people's kids. Like
everybody was safe.
We did feel safe. And I kind of make the joke that we couldn't even dance in our school, which people then picture Footloose, which it wasn't necessarily like that. It was the old Dutchmen were funding it and they didn't want the, you know, but it was a very tight knit community. And when I left, I really think that I had that the picture in my head that that's how everybody was, you know, now looking back on that community. And when I go to visit, my perception was definitely it's the same there. You just didn't see it. And I went on to grad school. And that's where I met my former husband. The only reason I even introduced myself to him is we were the only two that wore Wranglers and cowboy boots. And so I figured he was probably from somewhere close to me. And he asked me out a couple times, and I had a feeling kind of in my gut that I didn't want to go out with him. I am the healthcare provider. I am the do anything for anybody. I'm the one that, you know, wants people to like me. So after about three or four asks out, I started feeling guilty. And so, fine, I'll go on the first date. I had the feeling the whole time I didn't want to go on the second date. Long story short, I repeated that behavior and ended up pregnant, married, pregnant again, had a practice with him, and was married for 12 years, divorced for 2 years, and nothing changed. And I ended up running away 2 years after I was divorced. And so that is how I got down here. I am close to St. Louis now, was when I had to leave for my safety and my mental safety. When I left, I had to start completely over because I basically left him everything. I signed him over my half of the practice. I gave him most of the property. I left with $50,000 in debt that he had taken out on credit cards after in my name after we were divorced. We had 50-50 custody of the kids in our divorce decree. So I thought, we'll figure out a parenting plan. Well, he refused to sign one and kept my kids for almost 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
So I have two daughters that I miss their teenage years. Now, it sounds terrible to a lot of people. Why didn't you go back through the court system? And, you know, I knew, and this was one of the reasons I left. I had not been the mom that they needed. I was scared enough of them. I couldn't stand up for them. So I knew at some point they were going to need me, and I had to get my feet under myself before that time happened. I also knew that if I kept making excuses for his behavior and his yelling and his manipulation and punishments, that they would think that that was normal. And I knew that they needed to see his true colors so that when they were 18, they could make the decision on the relationship they wanted with him. And I left them when they were 11 and 13, and at 17 and 19, they also ran away. I have had a very good relationship with both of them. They are 26 and 28 now. They go through a lot because of my choices in staying in a relationship that long. But as I rebuilt my practice here, I started getting the burnout. Everybody that works, I don't care what job you're in, you go through burnout. And I am not a mental health professional. I'm a chiropractor acupuncturist by trade. Wow. And there came a time that I was going, yeah, whatever, get on the table. And any time in my healthcare career, when my mentality, when a patient came in, I was thinking, yeah, whatever, get on the table. I knew I had to change something so that I lit a fire in myself again, you know? And so I started doing retreats on making yourself a priority. I didn't talk about my former relationship when I was in it. I would have been in trouble. I really felt like nobody understood because the advice I got was, well, why don't you leave? Or it doesn't really seem that bad. And so I couldn't find anybody that understood the depths of emotional abuse. So I didn't talk about it. Well, then when I moved, I'm trying to build a practice. I'm trying to make new friends. How do you explain that you're a mom that left two kids 4 hours away? So I didn't talk about it. And through these retreats, I had no intention of talking about it. And I remember on the third retreat, someone asked me a question and I used an example from my former life to answer it. And I remember covering my mouth thinking, oh my gosh, the cat's out of the bag. Because when people hear the word abuse, even though they don't mean to, they immediately look at you differently. And I thought, oh, that's the end of the retreat throwing. And it didn't take but 10 minutes. And every single one of the women that was attending that retreat had attended it because it's called Priority Me. It's about making yourself a priority. They were attending because they had come out of emotionally abusive relationships and were trying to refind themselves, find their identity back, learn that they were important. And that's how the Coaching with Dr. Heidi business started.
Wow. You just decided to do these retreats because you were just like, get on the table. I need something new. You're like, hey, let's all go away together.
Yeah.
But you had this secret inside of you.
Yes. Yes. And so it really, you know, when you're fired up in one area of your life, it tends to help you fire up in other areas. So I was managing both businesses for a while, and it got to a point where I wanted to put all my attention on the toxic relationship stuff. So I really wanted to retire from healthcare, but I was balancing the finances and what if I, you know, end that career and then this one doesn't work. All the what ifs kept me there. And right before the quarantine was put in place in 2020, I sat down and I printed out one of those Discover Your Top Value exercises. And I started circling words that meant something to me. And before I was 2/3 the way through it, I knew that if I was making the decision on healthcare and the coaching business, if I was making it for me and not worried about what the patients thought and not worried about my mom and dad saying your student loans aren't paid off yet, or, you know, my classmates judging me for not using my degree, I knew that if I was going to follow my passion, it was to retire from healthcare and put my energy in this full time. And that morning I had my admin email my patients that I was retiring in 30 days. And I walked out of healthcare 30 days later, and I love it.
Fierce. Now,
I've been doing toxic relationship education because I'm not a mental health provider. I don't diagnose, I don't treat, I don't do any of that. But I knew if I was going to make a difference, I had to be able to be the person that I needed when I was going through it. They need someone that understands it. And by educating people to see it from a different perspective, it then allows them to make the decision that's best for them, because people aren't going to leave a situation until they're ready. And they need to have support through the time that they're ready, in order to not feel judged or feel like it's completely hopeless. So that's what I do for a living now. And sadly, I am busy all the time.
Because you're educating people. So Heidi, do people call you and say, is this a toxic relationship? Let's talk about, how do you educate people on, are you in a toxic relationship or is this a you problem?
Okay, so this is my favorite question, because this always surprises everyone. When I chose the word toxic, it was almost 9 years ago. I have been out of that former relationship for 16 years in July. I have been remarried to the best man on the planet for me. I would marry him every day of my life for 12 years this coming September. And so I chose the word toxic 10 years ago before it was all over the internet. And the reason I chose it is because it is not a diagnosis. It's a blanket phrase that covers anything that's not healthy for you. Toxic is an adjective. It's just like saying, it just describes a relationship that mentally, physically, or emotionally is not healthy for you. Just like describing you have a black shirt on. This is just a toxic relationship. And I like to make sure that people know now, if you go on any social media platform, the word toxic is everywhere. And because it's everywhere, it has really made people believe that there's a checklist that goes with toxic. You know, if they're toxic, they must fit this box, this box, this box, this box, and this box. And in reality, what we miss is we are the ones that get to decide who is healthy for us and who is not. It doesn't make a difference if they're checking boxes or not checking boxes. If it's not feeling good to you, you get to make the decision on whether that person stays in your life or at what level they stay in your life. And we really don't think or realize that we are the ones that make that decision. So if you don't resonate with the word toxic, every time I say toxic today, take the word toxic out and just replace it with unhealthy. Because when you use the term unhealthy, it really feels like you have a lot more power to decide, where now society has made it like, oh, you can't leave them unless you verify that they're toxic, because we all have toxic traits. We all have the capability to behave in a way that could be toxic to somebody else. And so with that, when I do the education, I never tell anybody yes or no, this is or is not a toxic relationship. I give them the information that they need so they can decide for themselves if it's healthy or not. Because I had people telling me all the time that they thought it was unhealthy, or that they thought I should leave, or that they thought. So I'm busy doing research. First, I started doing research on how to be a better wife and how to keep my partner happy. And I wasn't Googling toxic relationships by any means. But when people would tell me that, I would find myself defending it, because, I mean, I had an education. I have a doctorate degree. Clearly, I'm not going to be in something that's unhealthy. It must be me. I've never been a wife before. I'll just try harder. And I remember looking in the mirror one day, and I did not recognize myself, you know, one bit. Being in a relationship that's not healthy for you, it's like walking into a room that stinks. If you stay in the room, the smell goes away. And you don't realize how bad it smells or how bad it is until you're able to get out and then look in retrospect at, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that what was completely abnormal in the beginning grew to be normal behavior the longer you're in it.
I love the distinguishing. I love everything that you're saying. I agree. Like, toxic is, there is no definition of what toxic is. There's no checklist. And it's really, is it healthy for you or not? It's kind of almost like when you were talking, I feel like it's almost like an allergy. Some people are going to have an allergy to this, and some people are going to have an allergy to this. And it's going to depend on how this certain thing feels in your body. So how do we know if a relationship is unhealthy for us? And I also, the caveat that keeps coming to my mind is, how do we know that we're not the person that's unhealthy?
I had myself convinced it was all my fault. By the time I left, I had blonde hair because he always wanted to marry a blonde. And if anybody can see me, I clearly don't have blonde hair. I am as extroverted as they come. I didn't laugh. I didn't talk. I walked with my head down all the time. So I felt, I mean, myself just slipped away. Now looking back, a lot of the signs were there in the beginning. The number one thing, and I actually am just getting ready to do a podcast on it. I hosted a retreat last week. I did a presentation on it. I've worked with my groups on it, is our intuition. Okay, you've all heard, follow your gut, listen to your intuition. And that's kind of like hearing the phrase, one day at a time. I mean, you hear it so much, you're like, thanks, that doesn't help me at all unless someone gives me a little bit of information on how I'm supposed to follow my intuition, right? If we go back to when he asked me out the first date and I knew I didn't want to go, I had this tension in my body. I had this feeling that wasn't great.
It was an ick.
But I'm a benefit of the doubter. Oh, it'll be okay. Oh, they had a bad upbringing. Oh, they had a bad day. Oh, they, you know, but my training, I did almost 25 years in healthcare, and chiropractors are educated with a lot of philosophy. And behind that philosophy is the view of innate intelligence. Okay. Innate intelligence is the concept that the human body has everything it needs built within itself to protect itself. And one of the easy examples is in a case of hypothermia, it quits sending blood to the extremities because life is in the organs. So the body knows how to pick and choose what's important for the situations that you're in. So when that first ask out came and I had that feeling in my gut, I didn't pay attention to it. I just said, it'll be okay. What that feeling is, that is your body's natural defense mechanism telling you something is wrong. That is your intuition. That is what listening to your gut means. And the thing with intuition is if you learn to listen to it, it will never steer you wrong. Now, your intuition doesn't show up and go, here, this is unsafe, you better run. It just shows up and says, here's a warning sign that something isn't right. And then we have to decide what to do. So if you're not aware that tension in your body is intuition, You'll be just like me, and you'll think that you're just anxious for the day, or, you know, you overreacted at something, and you'll push that warning sign down. Well, as my relationship went on with my former, I had that feeling all the time. It's that walking on eggshells feeling. It's that worried you're going to be in trouble, worried you're going to disappoint them, worried you're going to have conflict. By year 12, I had a pain in my stomach from the time I got up in the morning till the time I went to bed. So my intuition was 100% on fire all the time. And I thought I had anxiety. Well, now I have anxiety. It's because I was no longer seeing or hadn't seen that as my body trying to protect itself. I was infatuated with cadaver lab when I was in chiropractic school. Anatomy and physiology was my thing. And I had always thought I'd go back for my master's and teach in a cadaver lab. But if you've ever seen the inner workings of the human body, It is like the most complicated interstate roadmap you've ever seen. So you take all that musculoskeletal vascular stuff and you put on top of it your hormone system and your digestive system and your nervous system. The body also has a built-in defense system. That's our intuition. There, we have a built-in force field where our body knows we're safe before we actually consciously know we're safe or unsafe. And we take care of our digestive system and we take care of our skin and we take care of our hair. And we look at our defense mechanism or our force field and we go, oh, it'll be okay. And so what I didn't realize is I wasn't using that. That's part of the innate intelligence. That force field or that warning sign or that intuition or that tense feeling is your body going, hey. And for those of you who are listening, if you are in a relationship that's not healthy for you at home and you work outside the home, notice the difference in your personality at work and not at work. You're confident at work. People respect you at work. You can be yourself at work. And what happens to you on the drive home? You start getting a pain in your stomach and you start getting worried. And we think, oh, how come we have anxiety every time we're trying to go home? Well, no, that's your body warning you. The last time we were in this environment, it wasn't safe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I tell my clients all the time, the signs are there if you're reading them, yep. Right? And if you feel butterflies in your stomach when you're leaving a date or on the second or the third day after, it's usually not excitement. It is when you're having that visceral response, like your stomach's tightening up, you feel like it's flipping over. It's your body telling you this person's not right for you. And yet we're acculturated to think that butterflies are good and they're exciting and isn't it great? And I really like this person. No, it's like we're being told a bad story. So yeah. In addition to not knowing what our intuition is telling us, we're actually culturally messaged the wrong things.
Yep.
Butterflies are bad, people. For those of you smart haters that have been following this podcast for 2.5 years, have been following my work since 2009, you know butterflies are bad. And people argue me on this point. Well, I met my husband and he still gives me butterflies. I'm like, how's that working for you? Right. So it's really, you know, there's a difference between fear and excitement.
Yes. Yeah.
And nervous systems don't know the difference.
Nope, because it doesn't direct us. If it would hold up a little flag and go, okay, this is your warning that this is bad.
Yeah.
Some of us would still ignore the signs, but you asked about, okay, so what does it look like? I always like to talk about the intuition because it really makes people start noticing that. But the other, you know, there's character traits that a toxic personality will use. I am pretty defensive of the toxic personality. Right now, narcissist is the word of the decade. And yes, that is a diagnosis, but not everybody is a narcissist. Okay. But if you're trying to decide if a relationship is toxic for you or not, it doesn't matter if they have a diagnosis. It doesn't matter if they have an addiction. Does their diagnosis or their addiction make it less healthy for you? And that's kind of what I try to portray, but there's character traits that a person that is geared that way, which is basically use other people to get what they need. You will have criticisms. You will feel compared a lot, belittled. You will have trouble setting boundaries. When you set a boundary, that's you taking control. And a personality that I would consider toxic is going to want control. So they cross your boundaries. They will, you know, big deniers. They're going to deny mistreatment. They are going to say, well, you know, I'm sorry I got mad, but you pushed my buttons.
It's your fault.
That's not an apology. You know, how come you always have to be so sensitive or overreacting? You're going to take the blame for a lot of stuff, maybe instilling fear. And a toxic relationship isn't always fear for your physical safety. A toxic relationship, they instill fear so that they have that feeling of control, but it could be fear of upsetting them or fear of disappointing them or fear of making them mad or fear of not being good enough, fear of not being accepted. And when you're living in that fear, your attention is always on what you fear. And that's another thing that really makes the toxic personality feel more secure is if they have your attention. So they have your attention when they're being nice and they have your attention when they're being mean. And I think, you know, sometimes that's a disconnect. Your toxic personality is going to be quick to punish, you know, the silent treatment type of things. They demand respect, but you don't feel like you're respected in return. So it's all
they use nasty words.
Yes. It's all the things that when it happens, your gut goes, and then the fear takes over and you start smoothing everything over to keep the peace. Usually the personality that ends up in a relationship like this is the kind, caring, loving, giving, fix-it, supporter, peacekeeper, conflict avoider. It's the people who will do anything for anyone. And the toxic personality, or the personality that seeks that personality out, is the one who wants to be able to control. Okay, I wanted to make him happy. I wanted to be approved of. I wanted accepted. So I was on the treadmill of unrealistic expectations, and I was just trying harder. And a toxic personality, as soon as you meet every goal they set for you, and they promise you that if you just do this, things will get better. As soon as you meet that goal, they'll move the goalpost or they'll change the rules. So you trying to meet their expectations and feel accepted has your attention on them all the time. They really have no, they really have no intention of ever letting you feel accepted, because if you feel accepted, you're going to be proud and that's going to put your attention on you. And so that doesn't work. So I spent 14 years in something that I tried to fix something about myself every single day so that I felt like that, like I fit better in that relationship. And looking back, there wasn't a single thing about what I was fixing that really needed to be fixed. None of it was ever about me. It was always about his need to feel more secure in himself by controlling me. And that's the sad part about it. You know, we don't recognize it because we are the caring people. My number one clients are healthcare providers, therapists and counselors, real estate agents, cosmetologists, human resource people.
Yeah. Similar. We have a lot of that also, right? It's service providers, nurturers, people in the caregiving professions and spaces.
And really, if we put you and I next to each other, all of my people move straight to you after you get out. We do a lot of healing. We do a lot of rediscovery. Okay. Now they're ready to date.
Yeah.
So we probably actually work with almost the same demographic.
For sure. You just get them before I do, right? It's like you might even get them before a divorce. You might get them after the divorce, I'm guessing. You might help them decide they need to get a divorce through your coaching. But yeah, I think that what we do is, and there's an element of this that I find interesting that you're talking about, trust your intuition. When I get people that have been spun around by somebody who's, so I'm going to use the word toxic, unhealthy for them, narcissistic, whatever the thing is at that point, that they don't know north from south. They don't know if their intuition is right or wrong. And sometimes, and this is one of the hardest things that we work on in our practice, is you can intellectually know what's good for you, but there's a draw towards the familiar. And so your intuition can lead you to what's comfortable versus what's right. And a lot of what I see is when people come out of very unhealthy relationship patterns, some can start in childhood, some are marriages or just, you know, random, but they find nice, normal, good people boring.
Oh, yes. The toxic person, and if you go back to their self-security, they can't really find self-security in themselves. You and I are the people that are structured. If we take the time to put the energy into ourselves and we're working out and we're fulfilling our hobbies and we're taking, you know, me time and we're doing the things for us that fulfill us, we feel really secure in ourselves. The toxic personality doesn't have the ability to do that. So they have to place other people in their lives. And if you end up being one of those people, and it becomes normal to you, it ends up flooding over into every category. I would not be able to do your job very well because I never really dated between. I do some of that, but surprisingly, I do a lot of working with people through the divorce process, because once the toxic person loses control, the only thing they have to control them with is the divorce process. And I have a lady right now that is going on seven and a half years of a divorce process with the toxic person, because he knows that it's the only way he can control her. So he doesn't show up for hearings. He refuses to pay what he's supposed to pay. He won't sign things. He won't turn things in. He refuses to write the checks that she needs for maintenance. And it's even court ordered. So she's going on seven and a half years after 45 years of marriage. And so I do a lot of that handholding, because to me, their behavior during the divorce process doesn't surprise me, because that's how they operate. But being one that has the personality that our clients have, I have to have a set exercise plan, we'll call it that. I know that my personality, if I get distracted, will pour my energy and my focus into other people. And that's what got me in trouble in the first place, right? We're supposed to care for other people, but not to the extent that we're not eating or sleeping. And so I have certain exercises that keep me on track, because I know that about myself. And I think it took me many years to figure that out. And so some people, they step out of one relationship and then step into another one, and then they're frustrated. But we have to take the time to do some healing between, so you find yourself back. And I didn't do that right either. I spent 12 years thinking, oh, good, I'm out, I'm healed. And about 4 years ago, I started having full-on post-traumatic stress episodes. So I then had to go back to where I should have started when I first left, and, you know, and rebuild and go through all that. And we're really good at not being super true to ourselves. And I think that's where picking the right relationship comes in. The chaos you were just talking about, because of the self-security that they need our attention all the time. If they can keep chaos and drama in your life all the time, you get used to that. You always feel like something should be going on. So to your point, they start dating a normal, calm person, and it feels boring because they're so used to something going on, they start causing problems.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they're like, oh, this is boring. I know immediately if I don't have chemistry right away, it's not going to happen. I'm like, no, it can. There's a different way to do this. And that's what we handhold people through during this process, right? It's really unwiring that predilection towards chaos and doing the same thing over again. I mean, for you, you're probably somewhat more of the exception than the rule, that came out of something and then got into something that, like you said, you're married to the best man on earth. That doesn't unfortunately show up that way for most people.
Well, it didn't show up for me either, except that he knew what he was getting. Now, he will admit today, after 16 years, he had no idea it was that bad.
Wow.
Because I had to go through a lot of withdrawals. I was stirring up chaos with him because I felt like something should be going on and it wasn't. Another example is when my kids came back, they did great for about a month when they were, you know, you go through this, oh, I'm so relieved to be gone.
A honeymoon.
And then they started getting agity and they started, you know, really picking fights amongst themselves. So the house felt a little more normal because there was tension in the house, and that took a long time. And the man that I'm married to now, he really pushed me being independent, and he really pushed me having my own friends. And from the situation I came from, that was not allowed. And I also came from a situation where I was married to a cheater who never admitted it. So when my now husband would encourage me to be independent and join a gym if you want and get your own group of friends, I interpreted that as he doesn't want me around. He must be cheating on me because he's pushing me to be away from him. So he's doing something he shouldn't be doing.
Wow.
And so he
trauma.
Yes. And it was bothersome to him because he was very transparent. He never had a code on his phone. He always let me know where he was. And because he knew with what I was coming out of, he'd have to be that way. It didn't matter. My brain still always went worst case scenario. And it took 8 years for me to be able to say, okay, if he comes home from work and he's quiet, he's not mad at me. He's been at work all day. He's probably irritated with something at work. But my trauma was very much, oh, he's quiet. I must have made him mad. Oh, he's going to fall out of love with me. He's going to break up with me. And I would go straight down the rabbit hole of I'm not good enough and I should have never tried this relationship. And I know that it was trying on him to have to be the cheerleader for so long, but he did such a good job. When I started having the post-traumatic stuff, that was scary to him because he had no idea that this stuff was still all
inside of you.
Inside, and he couldn't fix it. And we had a couple years where we both admittedly said, we are surprised we made it. He didn't know how to help. I was mad that he wasn't helping. I wanted to blame him for making me feel insecure when really I had quit doing everything for myself. So of course it was his fault, right? And so I know that everything I go through after 16 years of healing, healing is a journey. It's not a destination. And everything I go through, sometimes I get mad that when I started having those post-traumatic things, I literally was so mad for an entire year. I couldn't even focus on what I was supposed to be doing to heal because all I could think of was this pity party of, haven't I been through enough? Like, why do I have to keep dealing with this? And when I go through something, it is every single time, once I get through it, one of my next three clients shows up with exactly what they need is exactly what I just went through. So it's always kind of been a little joke for me. I always say the Lord said, you're going to be a chiropractor for 24 years while I train you for your real job.
Wow. Yeah.
And looking back, I had no idea that my former marriage was as emotionally awful as it was. And I regretted and felt guilty about leaving my kids. I was embarrassed about staying with somebody who was cheating on me all the time. Dumping everything I worked for. I had worked 12 years and I left everything, starting over. And looking back, I wouldn't change a thing because even though it was tough and I wouldn't necessarily want to go through it again, I wouldn't be good at my job. And now
we've gone through that, right? Our experiences make us into who we are.
Yeah. And so it sounds crazy that I am thankful for that experience, but I watch my kids, they grew up in it. They grew up thinking that that was normal and they struggle with healthy relationships. They struggle with a lot of, lack of self-confidence, guilt. And that kind of breaks my heart because I always think, well, if I would have left when they were little, I'd still be a chiropractor. And not that I didn't like it, but I love this. And me being able to do this work makes my past make sense. I'm going on 10 years of doing this. I won't retire from this.
No, this is what you were put on earth to do. And you're going to guide your kids through this because you know where they've been and you're going to help them out of the tunnel. And it's not an easy tunnel.
Yeah, that's not easy either because my kids really don't want Dr. Heidi around. They want mom. And yeah. And you know, when you're a coach, you tend to coach in places you shouldn't coach.
No, I don't know what that's like at all. Having a 16-year-old and a 20-year-old, they're like, oh, I don't want to listen to you about dating. I'm like, but this is what I do for work. Okay.
So we just have to switch kids is what we have to do.
100%, 100%. Yeah. So it becomes hard to do that because they want to listen to anybody but their moms at that point.
But also, if I think back, I didn't listen to my mom either. I am one that has to fall flat on my face and then go, oh, that wasn't fun. How can I do that? And both of my girls are exactly the same way.
Yeah.
I tell them, but that's the hardest thing about being a parent. I think you have to let them make their own mistakes because, you know, me telling them, oh yeah, whatever. But I remember my mom, she tried to understand it when I was in it, but she never experienced it. So she would run out of things to say. And so towards the last couple, probably 3 years of my marriage, she would just go, Heidi, everything happens like it's supposed to. And I remember being on the phone with her thinking, thanks. But then when I look back, I left my former husband 6 times. And because of the emotional abuse, which we maybe if we have time, I should talk about that a little bit. He could say something that made me feel so guilty. It like made everything else go away. And I'd go back, I can't believe you're breaking up our family. And I would go, oh,
you know, that's after he did what, right? What right. The transgressions must have been massive for you to say, I'm leaving.
Yep.
Right. And it wasn't, he didn't put the cap on the toothpaste.
Yeah. Yes, because I had learned to stuff everything down. So I had 27 things stuffed down, and then he didn't put the cap on the toothpaste. So all he saw was what's the big deal when I had not addressed the other things because I was avoiding, you know, I was avoiding conflict.
Wow. Yeah. It's funny. I love what you're saying is, look, this is a complex set of issues. It's partially them. And then it can partially be us in this as well. But the net is, how do you feel in your body at this point? And you've had some rough goes with your husband and you muscled through it. And anybody that's been married for a long time has been through that. Andy and I have been through periods like that. We all have, right? So, but it's really, I think that self-awareness piece is so important, right? Is this a you problem or is this a me problem? Or is this an us problem? And so sometimes something can feel unhealthy in the moment, but that doesn't necessarily mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
And, yes, I think the emotional abuse aspect, and people don't understand emotional abuse. It's when somebody uses your feelings. If you don't resonate with the word emotion, switch it to feelings. They use your feelings to get what they need. So when you were just talking about how, you know, is it a me problem? Is it an us problem? I never, ever, ever thought it was my new husband's problem. I was so used to everything being my problem to fix. Surely, and I had him on such a pedestal because he basically rescued me. Well, after years of holding him on a pedestal, he was basically in a toxic relationship because I held him to such high standards, he couldn't even be human. Mm-hmm. And of course, at the same time, anything that went wrong because I thought he was perfect, I assumed it was me. So through the last 4 years of me having to go through the actual healing, I now am able to make him take responsibility for his behavior, which the first 12 years, I was happy to take it. You know, he'd blow up and I would just go, oh, it's okay. I know you had a bad day. And then I would blow up and he would set a boundary and say, I don't think it's very respectful for you to talk to me like that. And I would be upset with him because, well, I just let you talk to me like that. How come? And then I started realizing you're still not setting boundaries. And then you're mad when other people do. So that the last 4 years has been a lot of the brain rewiring so that I don't just automatically scoot into survival mode and really, really looking at myself, which nobody likes to do. But in doing that, the emotional trauma that former relationship had on me, I would have never known the huge amount of stuff that I still to this day carry with me because of that. I have to constantly be very conscious of the things I say, the way I say them, how I feel about myself. I used to be worst case scenario. Everything was worst case scenario. Everything was, if it wasn't 100% perfect, it was 100% failure.
I was going to fail.
Yep. Right.
The end was nigh.
Yes. There was nothing in the center to be like, well, it wasn't so bad. No, if there was one thing wrong, it was fail. And so it was difficult for people to be around me because I was so cut and dry all the time. And I've had to learn that. But I think, you know, if you don't know that much about emotional abuse and you're one that might feel like your relationship isn't that healthy for you, do some learning. Or I think I have a couple podcast episodes of it on my own about really understanding how the emotional abuser uses how you feel. Because anytime I told my former that my feelings were hurt or I felt like this, he would say, well, how can you feel like that? Or you shouldn't feel like that. So I learned to start not feeling myself and then seeing how I thought he thought I should feel about it. And wow. So owning how you feel, you can feel however you want. You're totally allowed to do that. But I thought I wasn't allowed to be sad and I wasn't allowed to be mad and I wasn't allowed to be upset. And so I would just slap that old smile on my face. And I was the one that wore the shirt that said, I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Until you weren't.
Yeah. And then when you're not, who looks like the crazy woman?
Then you become the unhealthy person.
Yes. And so the last
word. We can all become toxic.
Yes. I really have had to, you know, me thinking, oh, you've been out for 12 years. It was humbling for me to have to go back and really address the effects that the emotional abuse had on me.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And then we take that into our next relationships, right? Mm-hmm. And even though we pick a great partner, the next challenge in this journey called life is becoming a great partner, right?
Yep. And I
your work.
And I think too, my concept in my head when I left and I moved away, I think I thought, oh, thank goodness. He is the only person on the planet like that. And now I'm away from him and things are good. Well, then I ended up in a toxic friendship and I had a toxic office manager. And that was, of course, the Lord going, okay, now you've had that example. Now we have to do these. But then I hadn't really talked about it. So I started my own podcast just to get me comfortable with talking about it. Well, the podcast blew up, which is kind of hilarious to me and sad at the same time. But the people that are out to feel secure through other people are everywhere. And if you have one in your life, you will be surprised. If you really learn what to look for, you've probably attracted a lot. And it's because you have a good, caring personality. Our downfall is we're just not picky enough with the people that we share it with. And that's what I've had to learn. Just be picky.
Yeah, exactly. And listen to your body, listen to your intuition.
Yep. I was always the, yes, come into my inner circle. Everybody can come in and I'll help and I'll support. I spent the last 7 years kicking everybody out. You know, and I tease my husband that he's really the only one in my inner circle. And some days, he's not even.
He might be out too, right? Don't get too comfy.
But that's our force field. There's ways we can protect ourselves if we learn that we're allowed to do it.
Yeah. Well, you are an amazing wealth of information, and thank you for being so honest and sharing so much of this with us in a really real and digestible way. I think that I feel changed after having heard your story and the things that you've taught me about unhealthy relationships. And it's going to be how it feels in my body. And at that point, I have a variety of responses that I can choose. Mm-hmm. I can choose to slap the smile on my face and cover it up until one day it's going to pressure cook the hell out of me and it's going to spew yep. out in some venom. Or you can choose to respond to it in that moment in a way that is healthy, kind, and constructive. Mm-hmm. At that, I, you know, one of the mottos in our family, I always say, I don't like pick your battles, right? I think that if something is an ouch, it's best to say it in that moment, because death by a thousand paper cuts is not a way that anybody wants to die.
Yeah. And then somebody leaves the lid off the toothpaste.
And somebody leaves the lid off your toothpaste. I mean, even with my own teenagers, I tell them it is my responsibility to love you, but like you,
yeah.
you have the power of whether I like you or not and whether you like me. And that's how we behave with each other. Do we come from a place of kindness? Do we respond versus react in the moment? And we have all sorts of rules of engagement around, ooh, you're going hard. If you say to somebody you're going hard, that means those words are hard on my skin and they're cutting. Mm-hmm. And everybody has to back off at that point. You cannot go harder. When everybody hears go hard, you stop.
See, now in a toxic relationship, they would hear go hard and they would push harder.
Right. Exactly. You know? And then they would be outside of my door and the locks would be changed.
Yes, exactly. Because you've learned to use your force field. Now, of course, when my kids came back, they were 17 and 19. And I didn't want them to be mad, because if they were mad at me, then they'd run to their dads. So for a little bit, they were basically treating me and I was responding the same way I had with him, because I didn't want him to be mad. And what I realized is if you are a parent and your kids aren't mad at you two or three times a week, you're not doing your job.
Amen.
You know, but we have to get used to being okay with people not agreeing with us and not accommodating. And sometimes that's difficult. Just if they're going to be mad, let them be mad. You don't have to fix anything about it.
Right. It's my job to love you and to take care of you. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. If people want to hear your podcast, where can they find you?
So my podcast is called It's Not Normal, It's Toxic. And obviously that you can just Google, but you can also go to my website, which is Coaching with Dr. Heidi, and all of my services. And I run groups. I do private one-on-one, kind of just like you. That's all on the website. If you are questioning whether your relationship may be unhealthy, there's something on my website called the Toxicity Profile Analysis. And it's a long questionnaire, but it's just yes or no. And for people who've been in it a long time, even if you don't ever talk to me, just reading through those questions, you might realize that some of the stuff you've allowed to slip and you've allowed to become normal shouldn't be normal in a relationship. So that helps just to go take it. It doesn't obligate you to do anything with me, but that is a really good validation for those who may be questioning the health of their relationship right now.
It's a toxicity profile, did you say?
Toxicity profile analysis. It might say TPA.
Great.
On the website.
Super. Well, thank you so much, smart daters. I hope that this has inspired you to start pruning those unhealthy relationships out of your life. And like Dr. Heidi did, it's like, and now you've got to go and 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 start to pick the people that truly elevate you and your life. Remember, you have a voice and you have the power to decide who stays and who goes. And everything you need is already inside of you. If you're ready for your dating life to transform, come to smartdatingacademy.com, fill out a form, get into the one-on-ones. We're on a wait list. We're booking in the late summer right now. But I want you to know that there are so many people out there like Dr. Heidi, like me, like so many great practitioners out there that can help you. You are not alone. And if you enjoyed this episode, please go in and give it a 5-star rating. We want to hear. Dr. Heidi wants to know. I want to know. And thank you so much for being devoted listeners of the Smart Dating Academy podcast. Until the next episode, I bid you a beautiful few weeks. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.